So how many of you like the book, Creative Minded Success? You're okay with it?
It's okay. I haven't read it.
I like the title.
Yeah.
I haven't read it.
Don't we have a copy? Do we have a copy on our website?
No. I'm happy to send it out to people, but I don't know about copyright, about putting it on
there. Yeah, I don't know either. Well, what I like about this book is that, you know, because I'm an Aries, I'm into doing. And this book is about doing. And it's less theoretical. To me, like, the ultimate in theoretical books is a Science of Mind textbook, the 1930-odd edition. And this one is more into, you know, it's from his early days of writing. It's from 1919. And it's more about how to live the principles that he teaches about for the rest of his life. So Holmes says, the idea is to conform our lives and thought to a greater understanding of law. We shall be able to bring into our experience just what we wish, letting go of all that we do not wish to experience. This includes any past mistakes. And so what I learned about in preparing for this talk, I'd heard the term mental atmosphere before. You'll find a definition in the Science of Mind textbook back in the glossary. And it's, you know, if you try to Google it, you won't find a lot of people that are talking about mental atmosphere. I think it's one of those 1920s terms or something like that. So I'm going to be talking a lot about it today, and I think you'll understand why I became so fascinated with this topic. Now, as you know, every time you think, your mind is receiving the impress of that, and it begins to act upon it, no matter what it is. It always says yes. And it's like a seed falling into the fertile ground, and that's a metaphor that we use a lot in talking about the mind and the creative concept. So Holmes calls, this is his definition from the Science of Mind textbook. Each person has a mental atmosphere which is the result of all that he has thought, said, and done, and is consciously real. It is that subtle influence which constitutes the power of personal attraction. For personal attraction has but little to do with looks. It goes much deeper, and it's almost entirely subjective. This will explain our likes and dislikes for those with whom we come into daily contact. We meet some only to turn away without a word, while others we are at once drawn toward without any apparent reason. This is the result of their mental atmosphere or thought vibration. No matter what the lips may be saying, the inner thought outspeaks them, and the unspoken word often carries more weight than the spoken. And immediately after reading this, I remembered this thing we used to do with each other as kids. We'd write on a piece of paper something like, kick me, put a little tape on it, and then go over to somebody and pretend like you're hugging them. Pat them on the back. And so all, you know, people that come up to you, you're all laughing. And you're wondering why, because you have no idea that there's a kick me sign on your back. And sometimes I feel like we walk around with these signs, which are really our inner thoughts that are projecting. Now, mental atmosphere is, you know, it's analogous to the people that can see auras, the clairvoyance. Mental atmosphere is more for the clairsentience, which are the people that feel. They have that gut feeling when they meet people. And there are also those who are physically gifted, and they can with their hands, they can just touch kind of the outlines of a person's body, and they could feel where there are spots where there's energy that's missing. And that's what great healers can do with their hands. So mental atmosphere is really nothing new. It's just that it's an old term that we haven't really become acquainted with. So as you know, when you're around a successful person like Bob, a highly successful singer, songwriter, you don't, I bet he never thinks about failure, do you?
Yeah.
Right. And look at the evidence. ever since I first heard you perform, your career has been growing and growing. And so it's amazing how we feel attracted to people that think thoughts of success. They're confident, they're strong. We can hardly wait to be around them. And then, yet, at the same time, there are people that, you know, they're thinking thoughts of failure. They're critical of themselves. And it's hard to be around them because you kind of feel that weight that they're carrying. And for any of you that, like myself, that have had to live with somebody who's mentally ill, you know what a load that can be to have to be around that. When you walk in the house, you could feel it. And so that's why we feel so drawn to people that are positive and that emanate positive thoughts. And when we're in the presence of those people, we feel like there's nothing that we can't undertake. Mm-hmm. And that's a sign of a good leader. Now, people, as you know, have a mental atmosphere, but so do things and places. And the first thing I thought of was my current office. When I moved in there, it had been the place where our labor relations people used to counsel people. And so it had a lot of negative energy because usually when you're going to talk to labor relations, you're probably in trouble with your boss. So I moved into that office and it didn't feel too good. So a friend of mine who's a Reiki master, she's a sysadmin in one of the other departments, came up to see my office. She was so thrilled for me. And she didn't like the energy at all. She knew immediately, as soon as she walked in, that there was something wrong with it. So she could feel the vibration of all those people that had been in there before that were in trouble. So what I did was I started bringing in pictures of people and things that I love. I brought in some scented oils. And I have this beautiful pink Himalayan salt lamp in my office. And people walk in my office now and they go, "Oh my God, it's wonderful." And those who are energy workers go, "It's really light in here." And I say, "Yeah, yeah." So, you know, just by making some changes, I was able to change the energy of that room I work in. Because I'm not going to work in a place that makes me feel bad. And then we all have places that evoke feelings of peace. For instance, it could be the woods for some people. I know that you used to walk in Sugar Land Run, Connie, for a long time. Yeah, and then there's also the beach in the mountains, and in these places, there's no sense of struggle, and you just feel it's peaceful, it's calming, and then it starts to affect you as well, and that's why it's really good to go out in nature and spend time there. One of my favorite books is the 1926 edition of the Science of Mind textbook. This is Unexpurgated Holmes, and he talks a lot about mental atmosphere in this book. In fact, I did a word search on mental atmosphere on my Kindle and Kindle version of this book, and it went on for pages. So if you want to learn more about mental atmosphere, read the textbook, the old version of the textbook. So the textbook was about 6 years later than the book that we're reading right now. So you understand in terms of the evolution of Holmes's teaching and his thought, this was pretty close. So he talks about cities and nations having an individual atmosphere. Some towns seem really busy and lively and interesting, where others seem dead. Especially ghost towns. And it's really a result of the people that are there. And of course, nations are made up of individuals, and they create a national mentality, which we refer to as the psychology of these people. And I remember every time I've gone to Switzerland, I start feeling like a different person. I can feel the energy of that country. You know, my family is from Switzerland, and I feel... for instance, when I get to the corner of a street, I wait for the light to turn before I walk. Because I don't know what it is about that country, but there's no jaywalking. And so I become a different person when I'm there. And then when I return here, I'm back to who I'm accustomed to being. So he keeps going on. Holmes expands and expands. He says the whole planet has a mental atmosphere. So if you take a look at the book and you read it, you can understand how expansive and how important our mental atmosphere is. So then you're probably wondering why I'm talking about this when we're going to be doing some visioning later on. And it does affect your mental atmosphere. The Sterling Study Group has a mental atmosphere. When people walk in, they feel a certain way. My friend Dennis one time said that when he comes in here, everybody turns around and smiles at him, and he feels welcome. And I think we do have a very welcoming presence about us. And so visioning itself is an act of mental communion that allows us to shape the atmosphere that others are sensing. So when we come together and we do all the questionings that are in and write our answers in a visioning process, we are actually working together. Our presence in one room, we manage to affect one another from the presence that we bring in from ourselves combines, it becomes a group energy, and when we vision, it all comes together. And we come up with a new concept, perhaps, for our group. One of my favorite authors, they teach on him a lot at National Defense University, is Peter Senge, and here's the Fifth Discipline, which is his most famous book. And he says that shared vision is a force in people's hearts. It's compelling enough to acquire the support of a group of people. At its most basic level, a shared vision answers the question, what do we want to create? It creates a sense of commonality that permeates the organization and its activities. A shared vision uplifts people's aspirations. They can be exhilarating and the spark that creates the excitement that lifts an organization out of the mundane. It changes our thinking from my study group to our study group. So, I want to close. I realize I've gone through a lot about our, the role of mental atmosphere in the study group and in our visioning process. And I want to close with a short quote from Holmes, who says, in order to be sure that we are creating the right kind of mental atmosphere and so attracting what we want, we must first watch our thinking, lest we create that which we would not like to see manifest. In other words, we must think only what we wish to experience. And so it is.
Thank you, G.
Record time.
Yeah.
Take a break.
Yeah.